My name's Claire Levy, and I do the diabetes podcast for DRWF, and it's called Living with Diabetes. And I'm here today at our United Through Diabetes event with the lovely panel from the session, which was called Tackling Diabetes Inequity in Black Populations, Lived Experience Perspectives, and it was a panel discussion. So if I could just go around and get you just to introduce yourself to everybody.
My name's Amelia. I'm type 1 diabetic and have been for 26 years.
Brilliant. Over to you.
Hello, my name's Talika, and I was diagnosed with diabetes 4 years ago, but I'm not actually too sure what type I am.
Okay, scary.
Hello, I'm Dr. Bernadette Adela-Catrax. I'm a pharmacist by profession, but I'm the executive director of Diabetes Africa, and I'm of Nigerian heritage.
My name's Daniel. I've been living with type 1 diabetes for over 28 years. I'm a diabetes advocate.
My name's Barbara, and I'm a diabetes specialist nurse working in Birmingham.
So if you could, maybe yourself, Barbara, just talk about why that session was so important for people from diverse communities. It's something that we've tried to pick up on, and we're trying to do more, because it is an important issue, isn't it?
And it's well known in research that this particular ethnicity group have been tackling inequity for some time. And if I talk about working in diabetes, and we've got the event with the event of diabetes technologies, we're finding that there's a disparity with the uptake in insulin pump therapy, continuous glucose monitoring, and we know that these new technologies can improve outcomes and quality of life in all groups with diabetes, but it appears that there's been a disadvantage within the ethnic black and ethnic populations, and this is something that we need to be tackling, and obviously I'm working in that area and feel that I can make a difference.
So what was your discussion like in that last session? What kind of things came up from the audience?
Can I be naughty and answer that question that Barbara answered?
Of course
if I
you
may.
Can. Of course you can.
Because the question was, you know, why was that session so important and who is it for? And I think that it's important because there's a lack of awareness that black populations in the UK actually have inequity of outcomes and access. So the primary objective for me was to highlight some examples of that. So we gave some examples in diabetes technology, as Barbara mentioned, in what being well prepared for pregnancy, and also in renal replacement therapy. So that's people with chronic kidney disease who are living with diabetes. And in each of those examples, we showed that black populations in the UK were worse off. The audience for me, you might intuit that it's for diverse populations, but the audience actually for me was people who are not from those populations as well, to know what the issue is and to see what they can do to improve that. Onto the question that I was actually asked to answer, which was what were the take homes? I think some of the themes that came across, Daniel and others mentioned about trust and having that relationship with your healthcare professional being fundamental to having good care. Talika mentioned about education, about even knowing that there's a difference in risk, knowing that there's different subtypes of diabetes, knowing what, I think somebody in the audience said, what does eating healthy look like if you eat an African Caribbean cuisine? There's lots of key things. And then another one, I took notes, bear with me, was about avoiding stereotypes. And I think that's quite pervasive. We talked about angry black man, angry black woman, avoiding that. So I love the session. Got to roam the mic a little bit. It was brilliant.
Excellent. So Daniel, you're running a podcast and you're living with type 1. So what are some of those stereotypes and what kind of things have you channeled through the podcast?
So with the podcast, it's more been about talking about people living with diabetes or type 1, all types of diabetes there. General experience, so it's not specifically addressed, say, stereotypes or what I've my kind of lived experience, but it's brought up a lot of other experiences that I think is shared amongst people living with diabetes. But for me, when it comes to the stereotypes, and it's something that we all spoke about, is effectively we're never too far away from them. They're almost, could be perhaps the elephant in the room of, if I say something a certain way, am I going to be considered that way? Is something then going to be weaponized or used against me? And I think that's very worrying, because if you need the help and support to manage your long-term condition, your diabetes, but if you say something or something, you react a certain way, then perhaps that help could be not maybe taken, or you might not have access to something. That's a worry, and then it can put people off from wanting to go back to appointments and get to getting the help that they need.
So how do you advocate, say, for good diabetes care, and getting that community group to go and have their appointments and take it seriously?
I believe some of the things we spoke about is speaking up for yourself. Me personally, when I was first diagnosed, I didn't really speak up for myself. I just did everything I was told. But also just getting out into the community. So the only reason I'm here today is because of these lovely ladies who have involved us in a peer support group. And I just think if I wasn't encouraged to join that, I wouldn't be thinking about advocating for myself or for others with diabetes. So get it into the communities and just show others that it's actually okay. But as Bernadette has mentioned, the element of trust with the healthcare professionals and things like that, if you have that trust, we're more likely to do what it is you're telling us to do. As if we trust you, if we believe that what you're telling us is for our good, we're going to go along with it. So it's building those relationships, patient to healthcare professional, then more and more people will be more willing to join in, to speak out, to join studies and trials and things like that, to get all of the data as well as results that are needed.
And you mentioned diet. I don't know if that was something that you could touch on there. So how, and it's something that everybody talks about when they're first diagnosed. What do I eat? What can I eat?
When I was first diagnosed, I was given a book with food in it and what the carb count would be if I was to have it. And flicking through the book, there was nothing that I would eat on a day-to-day basis. It was a lot of pasta, chips, burgers. I never grew up on them kind of things, so I was like, so how do I do it from what I eat? Because growing up, I considered what I eat was healthy. I eat my vegetables, I'd had salads, my fruit, but they don't really look into actually what you eat culturally. Is it different, or is it what they consider as being healthy, which I always thought it was healthy?
So how do you adapt that then, as a specialist?
I think as a healthcare professional, it's really important that we look at that person as an individual. We build a relationship with them and find out what it is they want from the consultations that we're in, and it's a partnership, and it's building trust and respect and knowing what you don't know. And we, as healthcare professionals, learn a lot from the people that we help care for, and I think it's learning to listen and tailor-make the advice and the education that you give to the individual. People are different. It's like when you say, I don't see colour, you do see colour, and you also see that people are different, and it's important for the healthcare professional to understand that and tailor-make their dialogue for that individual. And to listen to them, that's really, really important.
And self-management is the key, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, you're looking after yourself on a day-to-day basis, 365 days a year. You only see your healthcare professionals, I don't know,
about one to 3 hours of that whole year, and then they're able to look after themselves. But they also need to know when they can come and see. We need to be accessible as well. And non-judgmental, listen to what they need. And also be realistic about what we can give to them as well, and be honest and open and build that trust.
So what about, you know, peer support, community support? How important is that?
I'd say it's important. When I was first diagnosed, there wasn't those things available. So I always felt like, oh, well, I'm the only one that has it. And if someone else had it, I got really excited and I was like, oh, I'm not the only one that has it. Maybe they know exactly what I'm going through and how I feel about it. But it's nice to know you're not alone and there are others out there that have experienced what you experienced, so you don't feel like you're going crazy.
Yeah, so I think, like what Amelia said, peer support is key, and there's that support of knowing that you're not alone, but also there's a learning as well. So at times, if, I don't know, say you're making a choice of what insulin pump you're going to use, yes, your healthcare professional can tell you these options, but actually you want to know what your, somebody living with a condition, what their lived experience is actually like on the day-to-day basis of what the kind of their experiences with the incident, and that's where peer support comes in and you have those conversations. But it's, yeah, diabetes, any type, I think can be quite a lonely condition at times and can tell you that you're not doing good or you can feel like you're not doing good, and that peer support is there to remind you actually you're doing the best that you can, and some days your best will look better than others.
So on a recent podcast that we've done around stigma, dietitian was talking about asking people how they want their diabetes to be. And exactly what we're saying here, isn't it? We're not dictating, but you've got to talk to people as people and say, what do you want? You know, it's no good just saying you have to hit this target or your HbA1c has to be this. I think it's all about listening to people and working with them.
And we've mentioned it throughout the day and throughout the conversation, but I think it's one to re-emphasize. My family is of Nigerian heritage. It's not my portion. God will do it, and I reject it. We're mainstays of conversations, and what those come from is a faith that God will solve the problems. And I think that then can be linked with stigma, in that perhaps if you have a condition, is it because you've done something wrong? Why has God allowed it to happen to you? Is it because you're not prayerful enough? Like, there's all those, and Black populations are very diverse, but you'll find a link in many of them. I know many people are from Caribbean, but there's their own version of that kind of theme. And so when we talk about stigma, often it can be within our own communities. So I have a relative who I won't be specific about, who only maybe 3 or 4 years ago did I find out that that person was living with type 1 diabetes. We grew up together. That's my uncle. Oh, I've just outed him. Can you take that out? Maybe. I have a lot of uncles. But basically, I only found out recently. And they knew that I was working in diabetes for a long time. And it just never come up, because upon conversation, it was like they didn't want me to think that there was something wrong with them. Even though I'm a healthcare professional, I work in diabetes, the stigma in diabetes can be a lot, and that is within family and in the community. And so we're talking about that internal stigma, and then there's a stigma outwardly. One of the comments said, you know, why are there not more people of colour at this conference? I think DRWF have done a really good job to encourage and promote, and I'm really thankful for the session. But I think there is that baseline that, as Dan mentioned in the talk, that Dan, Talika and Amelia have had to overcome a lot to be advocates and to be speaking here today. So for people who haven't gone on that journey, to come and be identified with diabetes publicly, there's photographers here, there's social media, it's not like something that they can visit discreetly, it would be like quite public, I think is an important aspect that we haven't talked about. Sorry, uncle.
So have you got any hints and tips that you can give to people to make that an easier journey?
I tend to I used to go through a stage where you would never know that I had a pump. You'd never know that I had a Dexcon on my arm. You'd never know. I've got to the stage where now I proudly just have it out. And if people do ask, oh, what's that on your arm? I'd be like, well, I've got diabetes and this is what it is. Whereas before, I could go to jobs and no one would know because I just wouldn't tell anybody. Or if I had a day off because I had a hospital appointment, I would just be like, oh, it's just a routine checkup, it's fine. And people would ask questions, but I'd brush it off and be like, no, I'm fine. But it got to a point where I had to be like, actually, I knew you need to tell them, because if there's an emergency, they're not going to know what to do. So now I'm more open about it than I used to be.
So I think for me, everyone kind of has to go on their own sort of individual journey to acceptance. So what Amelia says, I was like that. So I wouldn't tell people at school, at work. So even one of my friends now, we've known each other since we were 11, so 20 plus years of friendship. He even says to me now, at school you never said anything. You only told me one random thing about you have to be careful with your feet and what shoes you wear. And he was like, you only said that. But it was my own journey to learning to accept that I have type 1 diabetes. And I think that if anyone is struggling, I would just want them to know that there will come a point where you can accept the condition and you will get it, but it's about taking it day by day. But you can get there, and if I can get there, you can get there. It's just taking it day by day. And once you reach that point of acceptance, like Amelia said, there's almost like a weight lifted off your shoulder, and people will ask you about your tech and you'll talk about it, and then before you know it, you're at a conference in the panel talking on stage, and then afterwards you're on the podcast talking about your experiences. And so it all starts from that acceptance and then moving forward.
Anything to add?
I would say just trust yourself as well, because sometimes you're being told different things. There's a lot of, if you're not educated or if you're not sure, there's a lot of advice that's given from people who think they know about diabetes and so on and so forth, but it doesn't work for everybody. There's no black and white for every single person. There's no blanket control of diabetes management. As you said, it's your day to day 24/7, so you have to know what works for you and what doesn't. Yes, you do follow, you know, the healthcare advice and what you're told to do, but to a certain extent you have to know your own body and how to manage that. And I would also say not to be ashamed of it in a way, because it's, as these guys have mentioned, once you accept it, that's when you learn more. Even things like getting into community, me just being able to speak about my personal experience and hearing others helps me to manage my diabetes, as well as helps me with the mental health aspect of it. And just knowing that you're not alone makes a big difference. It takes that weight off your shoulders and it helps you to feel a bit more normal. So yeah,
I mean, from a health care perspective, I would say, you know, ask questions, be prepared, advocate for yourself. Remember, your healthcare professional is there to support you with what you'd like to do. You don't always have to agree with that. Bring your agenda to your consultations and in some way, preparedness. So go out and research things. Go out and look at different things. Ask those questions. Say, am I entitled? How do I get there? Are there other options? Be in control of that consultation. Empower yourself. We are just a facilitator to help you to get to where you need. And I know myself, I learn a lot from the consultations that I have, and I take that away and use that in my other interactions with patients.
I was going to say, from a healthcare professional perspective as well, to add to what Barbara said, is try and be humble. Ask questions in the faith that the person receiving the question will take it in a positive light. Take the time to build a relationship. I think also look up Culture of Humility resources. A plug to our our site. We have some cultural humility resources to help healthcare professionals, because I know it can be extremely awkward and sometimes challenging and scary to ask someone a question about their culture if you don't know how they're going to react to it. And I have been in that situation when I've been in consultations where I've asked someone from a culture that's not the same as mine a question, and it can be really nerve-wracking because you don't know how they're going to respond, and you don't want to offend anyone. So I guess that's a big tip. An example linked to that from a person living with diabetes perspective, if you had jollof rice, don't say that you had pasta. Be honest, because that might solve so many problems moving forward. That healthcare professional might be the first time they've heard of jollof rice. If you had ewa, if you had festivals, I can name all different foods from across the continent. Let's have that discussion. If you're fasting because it's fasting and prayer season, tell your healthcare professional. It might be the start of a wonderful discussion. So I think it's bravery and the faith that things can improve from both sides. I know there's racism, I know there's structural racism, I know there's battles that people have to face, but that's one takeaway thing that both sides could do.
Thank you all very much indeed.
Thank you so much,
thank
Claire.
You.
Have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this Living with Diabetes special podcast report from United Through Diabetes 2024, presented by Claire Levy and brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation.